Okay, so tonight we're going to touch upon, this is the first part of a new series. We're not going to be hitting any booklets even. We're going to be just introducing the Torah personalities, the Gedolim of the past 500 years. So, specifically, I have a special affinity for the Poskim. So we're going to be touching on Poskim, the people who literally shaped Jewish history and halacha forever. So, a few just introductions. Who cares? What's the value? And what I personally am coming to do. Okay? So number one, who cares? There's an interesting Magen Avraham in Hilchas Kriya Shema. The Magen Avraham goes and says that if you're in the middle of Kriya Shema, don't go and don't even try to make a remez to somebody. Don't make any hefsik. Just go and say Kriya Shema. Everyone knows that. You don't interrupt during Kriya Shema. If anyone talks to you, don't answer. Says the Magen Avraham, even for a Dvar Mitzvah, like the Gemara and Yuma. So we're going to get to the Magen Avraham 1 week, and all about him, who he was, Rav Avraham Abeli Gumbiner. Okay, we're going to get there. But all the Mefarshim are busy. What does the Magen Avraham mean? What was the proof from the Gemara? He doesn't say. He spoke very succinctly. So they explain, the Gemara over there was trying to explain, and again, the context is, this is a mitzvah. The Gemara over there says, what was the mitzvah? There was one Amora, and there was a debate. What was his actual name? Kabuta, Kaputa, a Bez, a Pei. And the Gemara goes back and forth. The Magen Avraham is referencing, says the Mefarshim, on the Magen Avraham already. There's Mefarshim on the Magen Avraham, who's coming to be Mefarish, the Shulchan Aruch, right? Says the Mefarshim, that's a mitzvah. To know the Man D'Omar in the Gemara, exactly what his name was, is a mitzvah. This is where it gets very gray. What's that mitzvah? That's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So I have to thank Yoni Waxpress. He actually showed me. There's a tshuva about it. Rabbi Akiva Hillel has tshuvas. Vayoshev Hayam. Rabbi Akiva Hillel, the famous rabbi from Israel, lives in Arzei Abir, actually. He used to live not so far away. And he has a whole tshuva on this very topic. What's the mitzvah? It's left field. It's literally left field. In the middle of Kriya Shema, don't interrupt yourself, even for a mitzvah. As we find in the Gemara and Yuma. What was that mitzvah that you shouldn't interrupt for? Trying to find out the guy's name. Yeah. So even that don't do during Kriya Shema. Sorry if that wasn't clear. But what we do see is that knowing the Amiram's names seems to be some
person drowning, of course, right?
Yeah. So we're not going to get too into Hilchas Kriya Shema yet. If there's Sakanas Nefashas, you stop. If there's a Melech, there's a lot of different dinim. What you should do in the middle of Hilchas Kriya Shema. And middle of Kriya Shema. So there's a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah here? What is it? It's definitely not learning, because it's not learning. It's as simple as that. It's knowing what's what. So there's a lot of different values to be highlighted. One of them that I think is one of the most valuable things is that Judaism wasn't born yesterday. Minog, Misora, that's Pirkei Avos, right? That's what we start with. Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, Umasara LeYeshua, Yeshua LeZakenim, Zakenim LeNeviim, UNeviim Misarul Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. There's Misora. And very often, when you get to all these Mar Mekaymis and all these books, they turn into Svarim. They're not people, they're Svarim. And you refer to the Shach and the Taz as a Shach and a Taz. He was Reb Shapsi HaKohen, who lived in 1621, who had a family, wife, and kids, who was on the run during Tach V'Tat, one of the worst massacres ever, and wrote his Pirush, Sifsei Kohen, which is now referred to as the Shach, on the run with no Svarim at times. That's the Shach. People come to life. There's an actual train. There's an actual Masorah. There's people. They were people who had lived. They were on tremendous levels, well beyond ours. But they were actual people that you could connect to and could glean from. They're not just books. That's, to me, one of the biggest values that speaks to me, because it brings it to life. I could actually take you back to the basics. You tell me what yeshiva you learned in, and we'll go there. Again, a little gray at times, because, you know, it gets a little bit hard to go generation by generation in the 16 to 1700s. But literally within six rebbeim, we can mostly get back to the Vilna Gaon. Almost any institution in America will get back to the Vilna Gaon like this. And then from there, it's not so far back to the Shach. From there, to get back to the Ramah. It really all falls into place. And then, before you know it, you're by the Rishonim. And here we are on our way to the Goyim as we get back to Har Sinai. And it comes to life. I can actually take you there. We could go there. That's one of the values of learning history. So tonight, we're going to just start. Because he really could take hours upon hours. There's so many Svarim written on the first person I want to speak about. He was Rabbi Yosef Cairo. Yeah. Rabbi Yosef Cairo, where do you start?
My Zayde was born in Tzfat. In the apartment in Rabbi Yosef Cairo's shul.
Wow. So, we're going to get there. Tzfat is more than halfway through his life. He had a whole life before he even made it to Eretz Yisrael. People think, Beis Yosef Tzfat. He was actually born in Spain. So, here we go. Beis Yosef, who was Beis Yosef? Beis Yosef was Rabbi Yosef Cairo. We don't know that much about his upbringing. We know he was born in... one more disclaimer. This is a very important disclaimer. When you get to actual dates, very, very quickly, it turns into... It could veer off into academia. Very, very fast. I'm not an academic, and I'm not trying to be. The dates are not 100% verified and accurate. Anyone who wishes to look into it further, there are so many books, so many professors who know a lot more than I do. This is to get a picture and an outline. So again, if I say that he was born in 1488 and they prove that it's 1490, personally, you'll forgive me, I don't care. Because that's not what I'm coming to do here. That's not what this shiur is coming to address. Deal? Okay, I hope everyone's on the same page. Because, I'm not an academic, and they did a lot more research. Here we go. So, the Beis Yosef was actually born in Spain. This is at the very, very end of the Spanish glory days. They were the most glorious days, arguably, of Jewish history. All the Rishonim that we have were all, you name it. And most of the most famous ones were at the end. Rabbi Yoina, the Ramban, the Ritva, the Rajba, the Rush, who moved from Germany and wound up in Spain. That was at the very tail end. There were so many even before that. Some famous, some not so famous. And it was really the glory days. He was born in 1488. At 4 years old, there was already the Spanish Inquisition and the expulsion. So he's on the move. Who was his father? His father was Rabbi Ephraim Cairo. He quotes him three times. I saw in Sfarim. I wish I could do that. We'll get there one day. He quotes him two or three times throughout the Beis Yosef. And his uncle actually has a sefer. Rabbi Yitzchak Cairo actually has a sefer called Toldos Yitzchak, if I'm not mistaken. And that's where they glean some of the historical aspects. Because he actually speaks about his family. Okay, he's born in Spain, Spanish Inquisition, he's on the move, and he then moves to Portugal. Portugal, at the time, did not expel all their Yidden. Okay, who was there? Who was the treasurer of the Portuguese kingdom? Anyone? Abarbanel, very good. Don Yitzchok Abarbanel. Oh, he was actually in Portugal. Now, this is already a separate discussion. Exactly where do we draw the line? Who's a Rishon, who's an Achron? Again, we're picking up right now in the Beis Yosef, and we're only going to get closer to 2022. As we move along, we're going to get through the Beis Yosef, the Ramah. We're going to go from the Ramah to the Marshal to the Taz, Taz to the Shach, Shach to Mogan Avram. We're going to work our way from 1488 onward. So, where's the Rishonim? Ironically, this is just for fun, if I would go and take a poll, right? Rabbeinu Avadim Bar Tanua was a? Achron. The Abarbanel was a? Rishon. The Beis Yosef was a? Right. Very quickly, there. I always thought about the Rebbe Vadim Bartanua was a Rishon. The Svarna was a... He's a Rishon. He was later than the Barbanel and the Beis Yosef. The Svarno actually lived afterward. But somehow the Beis Yosef, he's definitely an Akron. The Svarno, he's for sure a Rishon. The Balakeda, if anyone's ever heard of him, we'll get there 1 week, maybe. He's more Drush. He also was an Akron. Contrary to popular belief.
Ibn Ezra
was a Rishon. Because he already corresponded with the Ramban. Undisputed. Undisputed. So, that's just, you know, keep it in mind, bear in mind, because we definitely, who cares, again, there's a lot of deference that we give to the Rishonim, right? A Rebbe of mine one time wrote to Chaim Kanievsky, can you be Medayik, the Ran, Rabbeinu Nisim, the Ran, the Rishon, he wrote drushes. It's called Drushas Haran. His drushes, and they're very basic parts of like Jewish philosophy. So he wanted to know, are you allowed to be medayik? We sit there in a Rashba, in a Rashi, in Shas, and Rebbeim and Yeshivas will sit there picking it apart, every wording and every grammatical context. Can you do that for the Drushas Haran? What would you say? Make it up?
No.
Okay, so I don't know. Yeah, why? Probably not. He wasn't writing as halacha sefer. Says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, he wrote him back in a handwritten letter. This is back in the days. He answered every single letter. He said, of course, all wording of the Rishonim was written betachlis hadikta, and you can be medayik anything. So again, there's a certain deference. And then, when was that cut off? Right. So, generally speaking, the Beis Yosef usually is viewed as an Achron. So he's born in Spain, getting back to his actual life. He's born in Spain, he moves on to Portugal, and then they didn't get their fill, right? Ferdinand and Isabella, they went after and they forced Portugal to kick out the Jews from there. Now, there was one country that capitalized, big time, and they realized good and well that Jews bring money and prosperity and all good things. And Turkey opened up and said, everyone just come. And all the Jews, a lot of Spanish people fleeing the Spanish Inquisition, they went to Turkey. And then from there, they wound up everywhere. And for all Sephardi history lovers, they took over countless communities. In Morocco, for example, there's two parts of history. Before the Spanish Jews came and after the Spanish Jews came. And when they came, they made their own separate kahila because they had minhagim. They had yeshivas. The Spanish Jews were the epicenter of Torah learning in the world, arguably. So they came to Morocco. Morocco was there for thousands of years. And they made their own community. Eventually, they took over. And the Moroccans folded to whatever the Spanish Migurashim, whatever they said. And that's why Moroccans very often are in line and have note the Anshei Sfarad, right? They're called Sfardin. Why is that? Because they were the mainstays of Eastern, Western, right? Eidot Mizrach, right? The Eastern. The Eastern Kehilas, because they were the most learned. So then he goes to Portugal, and then he winds up in Turkey. We have 2 minutes left. Watch this. So we're going to try to get through Turkey, because there was a lot of... he starts writing 2 works. He actually wrote 4 svarim. What were his 4 svarim? Number one, he wrote the Beis Yosef, which was a pirush on the tour, right? Beis Yosef, Kesef Mishnah, which was on the Rambam. We're going to go through each one, try to like paint the picture. Then he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, which was simply a summary of the Beis Yosef. And he writes in the Hakdama that, why am I writing Shulchan Aruch? Because Beis Yosef, if you learn Beis Yosef and you go through them, they're so lengthy and so detailed, so fear not. I'm just going to tell you the bottom line, I'm going to write it down in Shulchan Aruch, and then you're going to know. Great. So then he writes, and you'll be able to review it once a month, all 4 halakim. How about that? You'll be able to go through everything. That's why I wrote it, so you can just have a quick review of all of the Beis Yosef. Then he wrote Kesem Mishnah, the Rambam. Then he writes Shulchan Aruch, and the fourth one is a Sefer which possibly, you know, a little bit debatable. The Magid Meisharim. Magid Meisharim was a chavrusa that he had with a malach. A malach, an angel. Now, they're very busy trying to figure out this happened, this not happened. Did he actually have this revelation? Did he not? So what I always like to say is that they don't say these things about me and you. And the malach goes and tells him, in Shemayim, don't worry, we know you want to have a yeshiva, which he ended up being his primary function, besides for writing Svarim. And before writing Svarim, he was a Rosh Yeshiva. And he wrote a Sefer, and we're going to get to, next week we're going to have to touch upon why he wrote those Svarim. How in the world did they become so widely accepted? Imagine if a Jew woke up today and said, listen, there's so many opinions. There's a Mishnah Berurah, Aruch HaShulchan. You take out all these Rabbi Simcha Bunim Kohn. I'm just going to lay it down, and all of Klal Yisrael is going to follow me. Could you imagine any Jew getting up doing that today and actually being successful? Not in a million years. Every single faction would go and, Fech, who are you? We don't hold of you. He pulled it off. How in the world did that happen? What was the opposition? And we're going to have to wait till next week. So, part one to be continued.